to receive the cavalry charge, their shaggy blonde hair, soaked by the drizzle, plastered across their faces. As usual, Antony was first to crash into the defenders, his muscular mount bashing aside the burly warrior before him, Antony using his Spartha to bat the Gaul's spear aside. He slashed downwards and roared in triumph as the blade bit into the angle between the warrior's shoulder and neck, a spurt of bright red blood rewarding the stroke. To Antony's left and right, his mounted comrades impacted the enemy line, a heartbeat behind him, and the cavalry wedge split the Gauls like an axe, cleaving through a log. Then he was into the pack, slashing around him, his sword smashing into hastily raised shields and iron helmets, parrying spear thrusts, biting deep into flesh and bone. Blood and gore sprayed out, as if he was a butcher in a hurry to finish his day's work and get to the circus in time for the race. The battle didn't last long, if you could call it a battle. Antony knew that this little punitive expedition was too small, too one-sided, to make it into the commentaries that Caesar regularly sent back to Rome to publicize his victories. But that made it no less real, or less dangerous, to Antony and his men. Antony reined in his horse and looked around him. The enemy had numbered no more than 200, and had proven little challenge for the veteran cavalrymen. At least half of them were dead or incapacitated. Any who had attempted to flee had been run down and massacred. Only those who had thrown down their weapons and surrendered were spared, and soon they were being bound and corralled, to be added to the massive stockpile of slaves that the Gallic War had created. Antony glanced down. His breastplate had an ugly gouge across it that would take his armor some time to work out. He did not remember the stroke that had inflicted it, nor the one that had slashed his outer thigh. He wiped the blood away with his palm to inspect the wound, nodded when he saw it was only superficial, and then summoned his Praefectus Equitum, Gaius Volusenus Quadratus. "Casualties? 1 dead, 6 seriously injured, Legate." Antony nodded, pleasingly light. He gave the order for the men to form up to begin their journey back to their base. As they left the field of battle, Antony took a look behind him and let out a sigh. "Something wrong, Legate?" asked Volusenus. "The war in Gaul is nearly over, Prefect. The campaigning season's finished for the winter. Caesar's command will soon be at an end." "Time for a well-deserved rest for everyone, then, sir?"
"I suppose so."
"It will be time for me to begin my political career. It's going to be years before I get a chance to lead an army into battle again, if ever." He shook his head. "Life," he said, "is about to become much less exciting." November 703 AUC, November 51 BC, Northern Gaul. Caesar had left Antony in charge of 15 cohorts, 2.5 legions, and ordered him to hold down the territory of the Bellovaci, a tribe of the Belgae, who had always acquitted themselves admirably in combat. Despite the crushing defeat that Caesar had inflicted on the Gauls at Alesia the previous year, the country was still not entirely pacified. The Bellovaci had, sensibly in hindsight, not fully committed themselves to Vercingetorix, and so had retained enough manpower to muster a large army. Their leaders were Caraeus and an Atrebatian called Commius, who had been a thorn in Caesar's side for many years. Formerly an ally of Caesar during his expedition to Britannia, Commius had helped with the negotiations for the British chieftain Cassivellaunus's surrender, but then had changed his loyalties and switched sides to support the Gallic leader Vercingetorix at Alesia. He had developed an even deeper hatred of the Romans after Caesar's second-in-command, Labienus, had lured him into a trap, assuring him of safe conduct to negotiate a peace, and then attempted